Disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. Hey everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Burchy. Joining me this week, returning champion. I guess it's been a little bit more than a year since we've had her on. Brand manager at Funimation, Charlene Ingram. Hey, Charlene.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Okay. it's been a long day today, but we're very happy to have you back on the show. Thanks for coming back.
No, I'm very happy to be back.
So it's been about a year, and when we last talked to you, you hadn't been at Funimation for a very long time, right?
It was right about a year. I just had my 2-year anniversary the last week of April.
Oh, okay. So things have obviously changed for you in terms of your duties there. You've obviously got a lot more on your plate now. So, I mean, give us a brief rundown. What are you doing more now than you were doing, you know, the last time?
Well, I have a lot more titles.
Right.
So I guess I was doing something right. Lance gave me a whole bunch more to work on. I have two big initiatives now. I was just starting the first one last year, which was the super amazing value edition save. Mm-hmm. And now I'm also in charge of anime classics.
Okay.
So I have those two big, I guess they're like mega brands because they have all the titles within them. I also have more new launches, and last year was I don't think it had been assigned to me yet, but I had just been given a big theatrical title, and I was going in to start working really heavily on Hitalia and launching Eden of the East. So those were the big things that were happening last year. Now I have a little bit, all of those titles have launched, mm-hmm. and now the new exciting thing is anime classics, and then the new more Hitalia, more stuff, more titles, more Eden of the East, and a big new one is Panty and Stocking with Garter Belt. So I was just recently assigned that one as well.
Right. Well, we'll talk about that in a little bit. But first, I kind of want to get into Summer Wars, because this is sort of after the life cycle of that for you. And tell us a little bit about the experience of working on that. What was that like, and what were the specific challenges with that particular film?
Well, all the films have a little bit of a different launch strategy. They have different needs. They usually, because they're one shots, they're usually treated a little bit differently in a marketing style. But with Summer Wars, it was one of the things I do as a part of my job as a brand manager at Funimation. We have a group of people who gives their opinion on acquisitions and watch screeners and do all that stuff. And I happen to have a screener disc of Summer Wars last spring. And I brought it home over the weekend, and I popped it in, and I watched it a couple times, fell in love with it, and came back and said, "Oh my gosh, guys, the Summer Wars, we have to get this. We have to get this. This is great. This is just, it's an amazing, amazing film. We should really go after it." And we talked about it, and we decided to pick it up. And I still didn't know at that point if I would be assigned to it. Because of everything going on with Eden of the East and Hitalia, with those two big releases happening, I honestly didn't think I would get Summer Wars. Like, I didn't think I would get three really big titles all at once.
Right.
So it came down in the summer, right before we announced it, I think it was Otakon last year. One of the senior members in the marketing department kind of fluttered into my office and started singing, "Summer Wars, it's yours. You know, let's, you know, do something big with it." So we decided to go for not only a theatrical campaign. I was looking through all of the dates for the Academy consideration, all the Academy rules, what would need to be done at what time, and Summer Wars, if we had gotten it out in a certain period of time before the cutoff, it would be eligible for consideration for an Academy Award.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be eligible. And a lot of titles, a lot of foreign release titles, they're only eligible in the category of animation for so long.
Right.
So because we picked up Summer Wars in the perfect spot, if we really, really, really pushed hard, got everything done right on time and just, you know, really went balls to the wall on it, and we got a theatrical campaign together, we could be considered. We could be eligible. So we all had to meet and get together and decide, does Summer Wars have a real chance? You know, should we go big on this theatrical? Should we, you know, do it all on this title? Is it that good? And I said, absolutely yes. And I was the biggest cheerleader for Summer Wars in the entire building. And I had to get everybody on board with me to help bring this, you know, theatrically, and then do all the paperwork, get a theatrical company to work with us to help get Summer Wars even considered, because it's a lot. It's a lot more to do an Academy consideration campaign than it is to just put it in theaters and then put it out on DVD. There's a whole other process to that. So luckily for us, there's a really great company out of New York, G-Kids, also loved Summer Wars as much as we did. And they wanted to help us out, and they wanted to be our partner on it. So we worked with them to get all of our ducks in a row, to get it in the theaters, you know, get it for, you know, the 7 days in Los Angeles, and then do a small but very effective, you know, national campaign and just see what would happen. It was eligible to be nominated because of the number of films that were eligible this year. There was only 3 spots. Summer Wars was not one of those 3 spots. But I still think if it had been 5 spots, Summer Wars would have had a very real chance, as we had such great critical reviews. The box office was above expectations on it, and it really captured the hearts of a lot of fans. And even though it was a lot of work, especially in there with Hitalia and Eden in the East at the same time, everybody brought their A+ game on Summer Wars, and I think it's just one of the most crazy, insane, yet awesome experiences I've had here.
When it was announced eventually that there would only be 3 slots for Best Animated Feature, realistically, I mean, did your heart sink a little bit, knowing what the field was like?
Seeing the other films, and I'm not just a big fan of anime, I'm a really big fan of animation. Seeing the other films, my heart sank only a little, because I was still very hopeful.
Okay.
But seeing Summer Wars on the list of 15, that made it very real to me that, like, hey, guys, we came this far. We gave it our best. The dub was just top-notch. Mike McFarland, you know, he put it all out there. Everything, every single line in that film, every single emotion, and then everything down to the mix, and all those people talking on top of each other at the same time, how difficult that was, and just, it was so beautiful and just gosh darn near perfect that I didn't feel like there was any woulda, coulda, shouldas when that came down to 3 titles.
Right.
I was just like, you know what? This is a really big thing for anime, because it's not very often when we even have a chance and we can even make an impact and be in all these big newspapers. I mean, there was even a tiny mention in People magazine. Just anime doesn't get that.
Right.
And
yeah.
it was still just huge. But when they did announce the 3 nominations, I know Jackie, our head of PR, and I, we got here to the Funimation offices that morning that they announced the nominations, and we were here at the ungodly hour, fired up our computers, and we're just huddling around trying to see, okay, who made it? But, you know, even though the heartbreak was only there for about 10 seconds.
Right.
And I was like, you know what? This is great. We were on the list. And we hadn't even done our DVD and Blu-ray release yet. Like, we've had all this excitement. And it hasn't even really, really launched for us yet. So it was a little heartbreaking, I'm not going to lie. But I still think it was a very positive experience for not only Summer Wars, but for anime in general.
Well, it's super rare that a film like that even comes along where it has a realistic shot and it's not a Ghibli film. Those just don't happen. I mean, some people had pie in the sky, like, oh, one of those Evangelion movies, but no way in hell. Those movies don't have a chance at an Oscar nomination. That's just not that kind of film. But Summer Wars really was, and that's super rare.
Yeah, it's a different... Summer Wars appeals to a broader crowd than Evangelion. And this right. is coming from a huge Evangelion fan.
Right, right.
Yeah. I love all Evangelion movies. But when you think about the type of people who vote for the Academy and the type of people who, you know, a more mass audience, Summer Wars, while it had a lot of Japanese-ness to it, it was still very accessible. And, you know, family relationships are very universal. Banding together, wanting to work together for a bigger goal, that's universal. Love is universal. And you don't have a lot of, you know, big giant robots getting in the way of right. a really tender story. And there's so much depth to Evangelion. I just think that Summer Wars was, for this audience, for this type of campaign, was just a little bit more accessible. But mostly, it was the timing. You know, Summer Wars was signed into production, done, the prints were done, it got its spots in the theaters on time, everything happened for Summer Wars. But something, you know, another film like Evangelion might not have been able to fit into that deadline. So it's timing and content. It's a little bit of everything. And also having a really great partner to work with you on it. Like, G-Kids, what they did for Secret of Kells was amazing. You know, Secret of Kells is very small, you know, small animated film in a field of just huge animated films last year.
Yeah.
And it got nominated. And that's, I mean, that's great. And they have that spirit, that never give up spirit G-Kids did, that I wanted them as our partner because we have that spirit too. So that's why I think, you know, Summer Wars, Funimation, and G-Kids were just, you know, just a perfect match for that.
Right. Well, it's a very similar story for them with Secret of Kells. That, you know, foreign animated film comes out of nowhere, sneaks into that fifth slot. I'm mm-hmm. sure that's what they were kind of hoping for. You know, that had a realistic chance of happening again, but I guess
we
not.
Tried. We did our best. I regret nothing. I regret absolutely nothing. Even the sleepless nights, even the all-nighters, even the crazy going back between them and our partners in Japan and giving everyone updates and checking all the box office numbers, everything, half the marketing department going insane, working on Summer Wars. I regret absolutely nothing.
Well, I'm sure all that build-up ultimately just helped the home video release anyway.
Yeah, and it did. It vastly exceeded expectations. Summer Wars did great to the point of, I know they reported about this on ANN, the O-cards. We had to print so many copies of Summer Wars to meet demand. The amount of time that it takes to replicate the different parts, you know, the amount of time it takes to make the discs and the AMRAs and the wraps, is different from the time it takes to make those really fancy embossed with the holographic bits O-cards.
Right.
So to get enough copies out in stores to meet the demand, some of them shipped without the really fancy O-cards on them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what Antimir, the graphic artist who is in charge of Summer Wars, what he did with the Oz avatars on that slipcover and the Jinuchi family on the inside, I think that's a very important impact. And it's just a really beautiful piece. I wanted everybody who got Summer Wars to have that. Mm-hmm. So when I found out that, unfortunately, some of them went without their O-cards, we all got together in the marketing department, the home video department, and I volunteered to say, okay, whoever wants one of these, I don't care if I have to put them in an envelope and send them myself. Anybody who wants one of these O-cards that bought Summer Wars, by golly, they are going to get one. And we put up that form, and it was a lot. It's been a lot so far. I'm not going to lie. It's well over 1,000 of those I've sent out.
Oh, geez. So you're sitting there stuffing envelopes yourself.
Well, yeah, after I get done, you know, with other help, you know, Antimir helped me with some of them. Justin helped me with some of them. Some of our interns helped with some of them. But a lot of them are just all the O-cards sit in Char's office, the mailing flat sit in here. I run all the postage. We drive them down to the post office, and it's, yeah, right now it's over 1,000 of them, and they're all stuffed by hand, and we try to put little art cards and other stuff and other treats in there as well. to, you know, kind of make it worth everyone's while. So yeah, anyone who fills out a form, they might take me a couple weeks. I do them in batches now. But yeah, after, it's usually one of those after 6 o'clock at night projects for me. Once a week, I'll go, you know, spread everything out on the ground and, you know, do a few dozen of them. But yeah, it's still, even if anybody buys Summer Wars now, and they go to Best Buy, they go to Walmart, they go wherever, and they get a Summer Wars without that really fancy O card on it, just fill out our form and I will send one out to you totally free.
Yeah, I'm kind of only just now noticing that they're on the shelves with the O card, because for the longest time in my area, anyway, in Southern California, I didn't see any with it. But just now, I think they're starting to trickle in with the O card.
Yeah, now that everything's been reprinted, it's gone into multiple printings, it's still very, very popular. It's still, week after week, it's a really strong performer. Summer Wars is just, it just won't quit. And that's great. And someone who loves anime, not even just, you know, being a brand manager for Summer Wars, it's an important anime film. It's something that I really believe any anime fan really should have on their shelf. And I'm happy it's being embraced. I'm really happy on both DVD and Blu-ray that so many people are welcoming Summer Wars into their homes, that it makes me smile every time I get an update on the numbers. I just see Summer Wars on there, and it's great. It's a really good feel good title.
So shifting gears, you were at the same time working on another success story that presented, I would imagine, a completely different marketing challenge, and that would be Hitalia, which is continuing to be released. Like, there's more coming, right?
Yes, there's a whole bunch more Hitalia coming. But Hitalia was another one of those. It was another one of those odd titles. It didn't quite fit into the normal, what is this type of demographic? You know, being a comedy, being a little bit off, being 5-minute episodes, having this very passionate fan base. You know, what to do with it. And the whole, where does this whole Hitalia phenomenon fit in? Because you go to any anime con and you see the Hitalia gatherings, and you see, you know, that group of people that like Hitalia. And you see other people who like Hitalia too, that might not necessarily want to put on the costume and literally wave the flag for Hitalia.
Right.
It had to be much more popular than just one subset of fandom. And I knew that it was. I knew, in spite of its odd premise and its little off-kilter sense of humor and weird subject matter, I knew that it had that it factor. And I just wanted to... I did a lot of things in the marketing on Hitalia that were not only marketing, they were kind of testing the waters for future things and making sure that I do a lot of double checking to see if my hunches are right. We did a couple surveys on Hitalia specifically to help tap into how the Hitalia fan base is super duper opinionated. Mm-hmm. And then the anime fan base is very opinionated too. So having those two worlds collide in one survey, very interesting, breaking out the girls' responses from the guys' responses on Hitalia. So, right. Which is, you know, totally deeper conversation. But I knew with Hitalia that it was something that fans really, really treasured. And it might have been a little scary when you found out that it was going to be picked up for English language release, because you have something that's so revered in fandom. They don't want anybody to go mess up a good thing. So I wanted to make sure that it kept the fans in mind first and then brought in more people. So with Hitalia, I wanted to not only help make it a big hit, which, you know, of course, brand manager, we want to sell as many copies as possible. We want to build the anime pie, get as many more people into this as possible. But I wanted to see how popular it was here. And I also wanted to prove to Japan how popular Hitalia was here, because the licensors tend to think, well, this is very Japanese humor. Is it really going to work over there? So I decided, hey, let's get all the fans together. Let's send thank you cards to the creator. And I'll take them from everywhere. And we will send, hopefully, a nice-sized box of thank you cards to the creator Hidekazu Maruya.
Okay.
And also have them gathered at Otakon. I thought I'd get a few hundred of them, honestly.
Yeah, I could have told you it would have been more than that.
Well, because you're expecting a lot. You're expecting someone to make a piece of art, send it in the mail to Texas, and then hope. It's essentially what was happening. So I thought we'd get a couple few hundred. We ended up sending this 60-pound mega box to Japan. This thing, it was just so immense and so dense, packed full of paper, and sent it to the creator, and it was delivered, and it was very well received. And all of the winners were up at the top in a special section, So when there was the grand reveal, when it opened, you see all these beautiful cards. And then all these messages from all around the world. It wasn't just U.S. and Canada that sent in cards. We got cards from well over 20 countries.
Wow.
Just saying, thank you for Hitalia, thank you for Hitalia. And we sent those off, and we gave out some nice prizes. And it turned out to be really good on the prizes, because Hitalia ended up being so popular in its first release, the first release with the bandanas. It had sold out at wholesale level.
Right.
So the brand manager copies, so I get a certain number of copies of every title that we launch. All those first press copies, they went to the people who won the Hitalia fan cards contest, and the volunteers who help work the events at Otakon. And after that, I couldn't get one of those pink bandanas to save my life. I would have to go to Best Buy and try to find one and buy it myself, because those were just, they were just poof, gone. So, but yeah, Hitalia has just been, I know I'm rambling a little bit, because it's just been such a phenomenon. It still hasn't stopped at all. I still get a couple fan cards. They straggle in from time to time. And some of the fan cards were actually, I didn't think this would ever happen, a couple of them were addressed to me. Oh. And have Sealand on them. And I frame them all, and I hang them on my wall. Because they're just, the fans are just so awesome. And they can seem, to non-initiated, the Hitalia fans can seem really, really hyper and... But they're really just so passionate, and they're actually, I mean, they're really well-behaved. When we had our big event at Otakon with 7 of the U.S. voice actors all in one place, things could have gotten out of hand really quickly, honestly. When you have, 7 voice actors voicing cute boys all in one place at Otakon, having people line up for autographs, it could have been a total madhouse. But I tell you what, everyone in line was just, they were just so happy, so well-behaved, so thankful, just so great. I mean, it went so smoothly. We were able to get twice as many people through for autographs than we ever thought possible. The actors had a great time. The panels were very well attended. I mean, we packed every Hitalia panel that we had in the big rooms at Otakon. And we even had a fire alarm. We were about ready to show the world premiere of Hitalia. Fire alarm went off after everybody had sat down, and they had to clear the whole room.
Right.
And we just asked, hey guys, we're probably going to be back here in a half hour. Can you do me a favor? Try to sit in the seat that you had when you left so we can show you these episodes and try to catch back up. And you would never believe it. And some people don't believe me when I say it, but it's totally true. When we went back into that, that big panel room, everyone was totally cool. They came back to their seats and we filled it back up.
Wow.
So, yeah. So I have nothing but love for the Hitalia fans, because they just really knew how to band together. And we had a great time. The fans loved it. The releases were an amazing success, and I was just going to have to bring the rainbow again for season 3, 4, and the movie.
Are these people you can sort of mobilize? I mean, is it really that cohesive a fan base? Because a lot of this stuff, it's just sort of, you can lump them all together as just anime fans, but Hitalia fandom is kind of its own thing in a way. So when you have a new release, when you have like Hitalia stuff coming out, and it's been a little while since you've released anything, but you've got more coming up. Is this something where you can just put out, you know, a notice to Hitalia fans and suddenly they will all start pre-ordering it and get right back on the train again?
They are very organized. Very, very organized. And they all talk. Their live journal community is extremely active.
Of course.
No, really, extremely active.
This is the only thing that's active on live journal anymore.
It might be, but that... And there's two big Hitalia communities, the Hitalia community and Captalia, which is a caps lock only Hitalia community, which is just straight up unfiltered fan spaz.
Right.
Is Captalia. You can't help but smile when you're on there because it's just so much enthusiasm. But yeah, I can. A fair number of the. I don't want to say to queen bees, but the bigger Hitalia fans, some of them, they follow me on Twitter. And when I get samples from the licensing department, when there's a final sample of a Hitalia thing, I'll, you know, take out my phone, take a picture and go, oh my gosh, guys, this is coming out. Isn't this cool? It'll be on the Hitalia Live Journal community within a half hour with questions like, where do I order that? And it's cool because I can also share with them, you guys can get this at Right Stuff. You can get this at other, you know, other outlets that sell anime merchandise. Because, you know, they might not know. They might be Hitalia fans first, anime fans second. I would like as many of those Hitalia fans to watch as much anime as possible. Because there's a, you know, if you like Hitalia, there's a lot of things that would appeal to you. And not just typical things like, you know, Fruits Basket and Oron. If you, you know... If you like a little bit of, you know, that wry sense of humor, you might like Shin-Chan. You may like, you know, we find, oddly enough, a lot of cross-pollinization in Eden at East. A lot of Hitalia fans also like Eden at East, which I think is great. But yeah, they are, back to Hitalia fans, they are super-duper organized, super-duper mobile. And yeah, they were hyper-opinionated. If they do not like something, they will let you know. You will get a deluge of emails.
Well, so it sounds to me like, I mean, obviously this fan base existed before you guys licensed the show.
Mm-hmm.
It was already very popular, you know, due to whatever, scan-related manga or whatever, fan subs. So this fan base already existed. So when you licensed the show, which you obviously saw as a bit of a risk, a bit of a, should we really get involved with this thing? But then the minute you licensed it, they came out, the fans obviously came out of the woodwork, and suddenly you were aware that this thing has a huge fan base. Is there a sense that after you released the first volume, or maybe they saw the dub, you sort of passed passed through their flaming hoops, and now they've embraced you? And is it less of a you better pass our test kind of a thing? Is there less pressure?
There's still pressure to keep up the quality, to keep up the energy, to keep everything just going, you know, not let it get stale. There was a little bit of that skepticism, which of course there should be. This was something that was their fan base, their baby, and this company is coming in saying that they're going to bring it to a bigger audience. I can understand why people would be a little afraid. It's like, are they going to ruin this thing that I treasure?
Right.
Well before Hitalia was even licensed, I mean, I knew about the Hitalia community. I'd been following them. I'd been, you know, talking to my friends that were also really big fans. You know, even before I even knew it was a possibility, it was just something you knew about because it was so big. But it's not something that we can ever, ever rest on our laurels or abandon them at all. They're our most valuable, valuable, treasured customer. I mean, the Hitalia fans, I can't thank them enough. They really helped turn this little comedy title into an absolute phenomenon. And they really, a lot of the thanks is due to them, that they told their friends that they loved it, that they watched all those videos on YouTube, that they watched it on streaming, that they told everyone that they bought it, that they asked for it for Christmas, that they gave it to their friends, that, you know, they wear their bandanas to the Hitalia panels. I saw last year, I was walking around in Denton, Texas, and I saw a girl on the UNT campus wearing a pink Hitalia bandana. It just, you know, totally outside of the anime environment. And that's just awesome that I mean, I really, it's not cheesy or anything at all, but I'm so thankful to these guys, and they just, I know the entire anime fan base is like this too, from whatever title that they really, really love. And it just, it makes me want to work even harder to earn their love.
Well, it's so rare to see anything that any of you guys work on in the wild, you know, outside of an anime convention environment. So just seeing like somebody with a Italia keychain or whatever, which I've seen around where I live, I occasionally I'll see somebody with a little like Italia keychain or something. And that always strikes me as like, I've never seen that before. Not since like the early 2000s when anime, you know, you could buy all this anime stuff on Hot Topic or whatever.
It's great. Cause I mean, you see people with the Full Metal Alchemist bags, and you'll see a little, you know, Sergeant Frog cell phone danglies, and you'll see a Dragon Ball Z t-shirt from time to time, and it's, you see those in the wild, but I like it when the a little bit offbeat stuff that I see, like, of course, the Hitalia stuff, when I see a well-worn Kyo from Fruits Basket plushie that I just know has just been loved, it makes you feel good to be a fan. That you see, like, this is something that, you know, someone has in their car, like, you know, the cars that drive by to have all the plushies in the backseat. It's just kind of a feel-good moment. It's like, you know what, I'm not alone. I'm not the only anime fan. It's just, it's nice.
Right. So I want to talk a little bit about this anime classics line and ask the obvious, extremely obvious question that you probably get 100,000 times a day, which is, who gets to decide what is an anime classic?
Okay. Well, the anime classics, the tagline kind of says it all, and that's standout series from every genre. The anime classics titles are all, they're all tested titles. They've all performed very, very well, and they all are good example of what they bring to the table. And we have coming up, I think it's early, it's either late this week or early next week, we have a series of trailers coming out for anime classics to kind of mash them all up and show what they are. But they're just good go-to titles for any particular type of show. You know that they've been popular, they sold well, fans like them. They might not all be super duper highbrow art, but they're all popular for a reason. They all have charm. They all did very, very well. So that's kind of that niche where anime classics falls in. And
well, let me ask this. Mm-hmm? So this is running in conjunction with the Save line, which is also a series of re-releases in smaller packaging or, you know, more economical packaging. What is the attempt here, and forgive me if this is a little blunt, is the attempt here to take some of the top shelf stuff that sold really well from 5 or 6 years ago and not ghettoize it by putting it in a line called Save? Is this more of a re-release with a cheaper price, but it's not a bargain thing, it's a classics thing?
No, not necessarily. If it's a, generally speaking, if it's a title that may be new to Funimation, something like an Excel Saga.
Okay, right. Yeah.
We have not released before, but has already been in the marketplace. It obviously got picked up for a reason because of its quality, of its popularity. We will release it as an anime classic because, you know, I believe that Excel Saga is just, it's something that every anime fan that's been around the block a couple times needs to see Excel Saga. Might not be your cup of tea. It might be a little too hyper for you. It might be the greatest thing ever. But it's something, you know, it's a good example for that type of show. Now, Save titles are all titles that we have released once or twice before. And for whatever reason, you know, sometimes it's the price point that they were released at. Multiple reasons, they're a good candidate for Save. They'll either, all titles will eventually go into anime classics or Save. It's not to say that the Save titles are any type of dogs or anything. A lot of the Save titles do extremely well. Some of them are just amazing surprises. I know you're totally going to hate me for saying this, but Heat Guy J doing very well in Save.
Hey, I'm going to take credit for that.
because A&N talks about it a lot, and Lance talks about it a lot. It's for some people to try out a title, it's all about the price and all about the amount of episodes you can get for the price. or if you're trying, if you're thinking about trying a type of show, like if you're not so sure if moe is your bag, you can go to Air and Canon and save, and you're not going to spend a lot of money. So if you're not into moe after watching that, you don't feel too bad. You haven't, you know, you haven't sunk a house payment into it.
Right.
But if you do like moe, great. You can go on to other things. You can explore that a little bit more deeply. Anime classics is different in that they're just, they're like, you know, the fans can't be wrong. They've just been, it's not just a popularity contest. It's popularity and it's quality. And it's the price point, and it's a nicer packaging. So they're, I consider them, in my big brand family, I consider them two very close sisters.
Right.
So, and they just, they appeal to two different types of people, or different people at different times.
So it's one of those situations where determining which is which, you know, you couldn't necessarily define it, per se, but you know it when you see it, basically.
Yes. Okay. It is very much a, you know it when you see it, and you can't tell at the beginning. Like a show that's coming out, a new release for us, you won't, you can't tell right now if several years down the road it will go into one or the other. That's in some ways up to the fans to decide. And everything, you know, everything is in a kind of a state of change. I like all the shows that are anime classics. I like most of them that are in save too. I mean, I love all my titles, but
yeah. Okay.
Some of them, you know, some of them are, duh, of course those are going to be anime classics.
Right. And then some of them are redheaded stepchildren. Okay. So let's talk about Panty and Stocking, because this is kind of exciting. You guys announced this license a little while ago, and so you're the manager for it.
Yes. I am. Lance gave me Panty and Stocking.
Okay.
I am going to confess, and this is not really a secret to anyone who knows me, I wanted this one bad.
Okay.
I was like, all the other brand managers was like, all y'all step back. I want this one. this thing is just so different. I mean, in a world of anime, Panty and Stocking is just, it is a kick in the face that there's, you know, that the medium needs.
Right.
It is, again, it's not for everyone. I can see why it's very, very polarizing. But for someone who loves animation and just loves, you know, Gainax being Gainax, Panty and Stocking is, you know, totally a study in Gainax being Gainax.
So the big question then is, I'm sure you're just now formulating this, but any thoughts on your strategy for this one? How are you going to sell this?
Well, it's still very, very early in the process.
Right.
And for Panty and Stocking, nearly as soon as the ink was dry on that contract, I wanted to announce it.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to get everything together and announce it. And we announced it on the first day that the new Funimation.com beta was, you know, opening into open beta. And Adam Sheehan, the manager of that, he wanted something cool to announce to bring people to the site. And I was like, hey, Panty and Stocking's going to be done soon. Let's see if we can get this up. And it worked out great. But as far as really formulating any release date, release plan, any of that, it's still in its, it's definitely in its infancy. There's no, none of the big decisions, none of the casting, none of the staff, none of all that stuff has been decided. We have a few members of the creative team ready to go, but it's all up to when the materials arrive from Japan, when we can get everything, when we can start working on it, where we're going to position it, you know, all of that stuff. It's still very fuzzy at this point. And we're all still, you know, in the total afterglow of, holy crap, guys, Panty and Stocking. How cool
right.
is this?
So, do you have any inkling on what they're thinking about doing with the dub?
Well, it's not, I can tell you for certain that we're not going to try to clean it up in any way.
Yeah, I assume not, yeah.
I mean, this is a show that, you know, needs to be as foul as it was intended. But, no, I want to keep it as close. And, of course, this is, you know, a lot of this decision is up to the production department, who
right.
they are pros at all of this. And because they are so good at what they do, my very hard job is a lot easier because I know everything that they produce is just going to be awesome. I imagine it will be as close to the Japanese as possible with, you know, all that stuff that you know and love from Panty and Stocking. But as far as the more, you know, the finite things and more the minutia for it, that's going to come out more in the marketing campaign because right now we don't even know when exactly it's going to release. So it's not fully formed yet. We haven't done the creative kickoff yet on it. Yet. Right. So we're just working on all the initial things on it, but I know everyone's going to love it. Every single brand that I get, I give my 150%. I give the full on Summer Wars, full on Hitalia treatment to everything that I get. So I'm 100% confident that everybody who's into Panty and Stocking is just going to love it. And I hope we can convert some people who are not so sure about the animation style or the content. I think people are going to be very pleased. I know it's going to turn out great.
Yeah, I would imagine. I'm going to go out on a limb here and suggest that that particular show, in this particular instance, that show has a pretty rabid fan base who loved it the first time around. And I'm not sure. I would suggest that they probably wouldn't appreciate a super heavy comedy rewrite. Like a la like a Sergeant Frog or something like that. Like they want the jokes to be intact. So that's probably going to be kind of a challenge, I guess.
Yeah. And that's all, you know, when everyone meets and talks about it, and I know there will be a really strong team writing it because it is a big title. It is a big title for us, and we're all extremely excited about it. So I know it will be good, but I can't really say anything without knowing anything yet, but because it's so early. Normally when we get something and we announce it, normally we wait a little bit, but this is partially just wanting to get the word out there as soon as possible that we don't have a huge amount of info.
Is there any early thinking on maybe TV on that one?
Every show that we get, we would love, 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 love for it to be on TV. That would be awesome. And I am, of course, all for it. But it's still, without a dub done, without anything done on it yet, it's really, you know, it's really hard to tell. But every show that we get, we definitely try. We definitely try to get broadcast on it.
So. This one does seem, you got to admit, like this one in particular feels like it's a good fit for like an Adult Swim.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I watch Adult Swim myself. I think, you know, of course, I'm the brand manager of the title. Of course,
a little biased,
it's a perfect fit for Adult Swim.
Right.
But yeah, knowing the lineup that they have and the audience that they bring in, I think Panty and Stocking would just fit right at home.
Yeah.
And not just because it doesn't look super duper anime-y. I just think it's a really fun show. I like how ballsy and avant-garde it is. I like how there's something in Panty and Stocking for everyone that can make you feel really uncomfortable.
Right. It's a good caveat.
The first time I was watching the screeners from Japan for Panty and Stocking, and I was watching it at my desk, and I happened to be eating ramen during the booger episode.
Okay.
So that was a hard one for me to get through. I'm trying to eat my miso ramen and they're having this horrible, horrible booger episode.
Right.
But I powered through because I didn't want my soup to get cold. But yeah, I haven't been able to eat ramen since because it just reminds me of boogers now.
Well, so we have a ton of Twitter questions. But before we get to that, I just wanted to get two things. Can we get a brief update on what's been selling really well? I mean, you know, you mentioned Summer Wars and Hitalia, but any surprises lately on what's been doing really well?
Not really a super duper surprise per se, but Eden of the East, King of Eden, is kicking butt and taking names.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, we had its first, and this is all public knowledge, public nerdery that anybody can access. But if you look on Amazon.com, you can look at the rankings of every show within TV and movie, all the entertainment, and within anime. Eden of the East, The King of Eden, in its, I think it was the Monday after release, hit number 17 overall on Amazon.com.
It's really good.
Yeah, that's crazy good. That's really, really awesome. So I'm thrilled about that because I'm brand manager for Eden of the East as well. Yeah, and it's been doing great. Great for a movie, and it's really helped the TV series as well. And I said this last year, Eden of the East is such a smart, relevant to the now series. Not just, you know, the older anime fans, every anime fan, I think they should sit down and watch Eden of the East because it's a great commentary on what's going on in the world now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just beautiful. And Kenji Kamiyama tells one hell of a story. And I love every single character in Eden of the East. And I'm so excited for Paradise Lost coming out. I know a lot of people have asked. Paradise Lost is coming out in August.
Okay.
So you do not have to wait too long to get your Paradise Lost. And we're going to do some other, kind of like what we did with The King of Eden and with Eden of the East TV series. We're going to do some fun little items for that as well. All of the Eden of the East creative team, we're all super duper into it. We like doing the little extra stuff and we like giving the fans a little bit of something extra. Like we love the t-shirts and the keychains and everything. So we're planning more of the same for Paradise Lost to just, you know, finish up Eden of the East with a nice big bang. But the other ones that are doing really well, we had Gaire Zero come out recently as well. That's doing well. Eden of the East, The King of Eden, and Gaire Zero are our first two DVD Blu-ray combo packs.
Right.
And they are both doing very well. So we're very happy about that. And, of course, Evangelion 2.22 is still absolutely on fire.
I'm sure.
because it's just a great movie. I love Evangelion 2.22. Evangelion is not one of my brands. it's another very, very, very awesome brand manager in charge of Evangelion. But, yeah, that's doing well. And another one, Fooly Cooly. Oh, my gosh. Fooly Cooly is just kicking butt. And a whole new generation of fans are experiencing Fooly Cooly, and for the first time on Blu-ray. So all of those are extremely strong, extremely, extremely strong. And we have a lot more coming out this summer and into the fall and into the future.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's surprised Fooly Cooly's doing really well. There's no contest. Like, when you starve the market for something that was that popular for so long and you take it off the market, suddenly it's back. Yeah, people are going to snap it up. No question.
Yeah, and that was so... Fooly Cooly was so weird for me as a brand manager because I was just a normal anime fan when Fooly Cooly came out. I bought each one of those singles.
Yeah.
I watched it every time I saw it on Adult Swim. I was so really freaky into Fooly Cooly. And Lance, our marketing director... And he asked me, like, hey, would you like to, you know, we're getting Fooly Cooly. Would you like to be the brand manager for it? I was like, and, you know, and just drool came out of my mouth. Like, really? Me? I'm good enough? You think? yes. And that was a little, you know, it was one of my little, you know, fangasms to, you know, get to bring that to a new generation. Because I know it's cool. You know it's cool. All of us fans who are around in the early 2000s, we all know it's cool. But a lot of the newer fans, they don't know it's cool yet. So being able to bring it out to them has just been great.
Yeah, and you've got it up on Netflix as well, I saw.
Mm-hmm.
Which is good.
Yep, it's right there, so you can power through it. So if you want to have six episodes back-to-back of Fooly Cooly, you can, you know, totally hit that anytime on Netflix.
Yeah, okay, great. All right. And briefly, one more thing before we get to Twitter. You guys are doing some auctions for Japan Relief, correct?
Yes, another big initiative that I and another one of our brand managers took on, because it was so big, needs two brand managers, is the Relief for Japan auctions. And our director of DVD and Blu-ray production, Clarine Harp, she's always done... coordinated all the charity auctions for the anime conventions. And when the earthquake happened, and after just that whole couple of days of not hearing from people that you know in Japan and seeing all this devastation and those are my, you know, my licensor contacts are not just business partners. They're my friends. And they're just so cherished, and, you know, we really love them dearly. And I love Japan so much. I know so many of the fans do. I knew we had to do something, and I wanted to do something and just really level it up and do more than just an anime con charity auction. So we went through everything at Funimation. We had a big gathering of the voice actors, had everyone come in, sign some stuff, get everything that we could find, and let's put it on eBay. And let's give everything to Global Giving, because they are there on the ground in Japan giving out money now. Don't have to wait. They're helping right now. So we're doing these Relief for Japan auctions on eBay, and they will be continuing with more items as we get them, as we get photos of them, get the descriptions up and everything. That's another thing I do when I'm not packing up Summer Wars O cards. I'm listing auctions on eBay and leaving feedback and helping ship out the stuff. So I have quite a lot on my plate. But I will say, we've raised, right now we're up over $13,000 on the items, which is great, which is great. And we haven't even gotten to the really, really, really good stuff yet. We got permission, and this is, you know, hot tip for A&N Cast listeners. We got permission to list a certain type of item that normally never sees the light of day. And these are the original art proofs of all the packaging that we've done. So the final printer proof from the companies that make the packaging with all the final specs on them, they're one-of-a-kind pieces. So we're going to start auctioning some of those off, as well as some of the proofs of the alternates that didn't make it. Like when we did the Summer Wars O card, the final one that was picked was 1 out of 12. There were, you know, 11 other options that we did not choose to go with. So there's going to be all these, you know, alt variants of stuff, as well as the final proof, you know, the final die, all that stuff that they're pieces of anime history. And we're going to put those up on eBay and try to get as much as we can to help our friends in Japan, because I think every anime fan agrees that Japan has given us so much, and Japanese culture and anime and fandom, for many of our lives, it's defined us as adults. It's defined me. I thank heavens every day that I can make a career out of this thing that I love, and there's never too much you can do to help a country that's done that much. And I know fandom, and especially anime fandom, is so powerful. And we have the power to give some relief to this country that we love so much. So we're going to keep finding the best of the best of everything and putting them up there and just spreading that love. And we'll also have, for people who can't bid on a lot of these items, they go for lots and lots of money. We had a shuffle lithograph go for over $900. We know that's a little bit out of some people's budgets.
Shuffle. <That's>, oh.
Yeah. But you know what? It's money. It's money. It goes right to Japan.
Right.
So
yeah, yeah.
I'm happy for it. We're doing our best to list some smaller ticket items, like the buy it now items, like the Spice and Wolf coins and the Slayer's coins, which are essentially like a $20 or $40 donation. We'll send you a coin. And all the packages, everything, every winning bid, we stuff those packages full of goodies. So you're not only getting your signed item or your coin, you're getting art cards, you're getting little stuff. You know, we want to say thanks to all the fans for donating, you know, helping us help Japan. And it's really, you know, it's the right thing to do, and it's really the least that we can do. And the feedback has been great, and we are taking requests, so if you have a certain series and a certain type of item that you want to see autographed and go up on eBay, you know, totally ask us a question on eBay, and all of us on the Relief for Japan team will do our best to make it happen. And we have a great team behind it. We have graphic artists, we have a web designer, we have, you know, Clarine, Amber, the other brand manager, and myself. And there's someone, at least someone from every single department in Funimation that is working so hard on Relief for Japan on top of everything else that we do, because it just, it means that much. And it's something that I take very personally as something that needs to be done. And I'm very proud of it.
Well, that's cool. And has the added bonus of decluttering the office a little bit.
So there you go. A little bit. I mean, we have so much stuff here. Yeah. Over the years of Funimation, there's been so much cool stuff and stuff that I didn't even know that we had. So it's been kind of like going through a treasure trove and a neat little piece of history. And also we'll have pictures and video of this up in the coming weeks. We had a big voice actor signing party where we invited everybody to come in, got all kinds of stuff. The licensing department donated a lot of samples, final goods, had them all signed by every actor who could come in. And we've got so much stuff. And as you would know, just getting the Hitalia stuff signed alone, because just about everybody in the building has been in Hitalia. It's chasing down all these boys like, you are a nation. Sign this wall scroll. I don't care if you just had two lines. We got to complete the world.
Right.
So, yeah. It's great, and it's and also on top of all that, you know, so many employees here at Funimation, you know, when a brand manager launches a title and we get special things from Japan, or we get special proofs, or, you know, special little things that we don't necessarily give away, or we save for contests and they fall through, we have all of us brand managers and all of us managers have our own little treasured collections. This Relief for Japan, you know, I totally went around to all the brand managers and I gave them a shakedown, you know, all of their treasures. Let's share them and let's bring them to the fans so that, you know, fans have these cool things to hang on their walls or to treasure. And it's just, I mean, it's just great. And I know I'm getting all verklempt over it. It's just, it's a really awesome thing. And I'm so happy for the fans for bidding on these items.
Cool. So people can just head on over to eBay and, I don't know, type in Funimation.
Our username is Funimation Entertainment.
Okay.
There's about 10 items up right now. I've got later on this evening, hopefully, fingers crossed, by getting all my stuff done today, I'll have another 5 I'll probably be listing this evening or tomorrow. So as soon as I can get to it, I will list more items, one of which is a really cool Soul Eater notebook signed by just about all the cast in Soul Eater. And then other various things. I'll have to look through all the lists of stuff. It really is a treasure trove. So getting them all up there.
Cool. Okay, well, let's go ahead and get to Twitter. Okay, so you already sort of commented on this, but Dragon Pup asks, with King of Eden and Gare Zero listed as, or released as Blu-ray DVD combo sets, are future Funimation releases going to follow suit?
We have quite a few on the schedule that are going to be DVD Blu-ray combo packs, because these two have done very well. As to some of the finer details within those, we will be doing, I believe Lance will be doing a survey soon about the finer points of that. They have been very successful. Just, you know, the first two out of the gate have been doing great. So that's a little bit of a stay tuned.
Right. Okay.
And we do, when that survey does go up, the fan feedback means a lot. It means a lot. We do pay attention. We read every single thing, and we go over them with a fine-tooth comb, and the fan feedback means so much to us. Actually, kind of off-topic, something from before that I forgot to mention on the surveys, they do make a difference, and this will be, I believe this will be out before this is posted, but we did a survey a while back about some of the simulcast shows, and shows that people would like to see on DVD and Blu-ray, because sometimes we pick up the rights for streaming and we go back and renegotiate for DVD and Blu-ray. I am very pleased to say, and I'm so happy about this, Princess Jellyfish will be coming out on DVD.
Cool.
And yeah, because the streaming numbers were great, the fan feedback was great, the survey, lots of love for Jellyfish. So the fans have spoken and Clara is saved.
Cool. Hopefully they'll actually buy it.
Okay. I hope so. It's a great show. It's really a great show.
Oh, it is. Yeah, I like it a lot. I just, you know, stuff like that where it's like the fans say, yeah, go ahead and put this out. Like, sometimes it doesn't quite work out that way. They don't quite show up with their wallets, but maybe they will this time.
I really hope so. I believe in fandom, and I believe that Jellyfish is that strong. Now, I'm not a brand manager for Princess Jellyfish, but I loved Jellyfish. So I'll be cheerleading in my own little corner for Clara.
All right, so J.R. Nemenich asks sort of a combo question with another one coming up here. There, you're doing the old chipboard boxes like Jennion used to do. How are those doing? And in addition, somebody asks if you're going to be including even more physical extras in those.
It's always a possibility. Generally speaking, the hard cases have done very, very well of the, you know, the titles that have come out so far. And those are a lot of those get snapped up in pre-order, and pre-order is very, very important. If it's something, if you want the LE, definitely pre-order it. Those pre-order numbers and those orders, they speak volumes. They really do speak volumes, as to how popular and how meaningful these are. I love the chipboard boxes. I'm a collector. I'm an anime fan. These are my trophies in my case, and these beautiful packaging, and I sometimes buy DVDs from Japan as well, because everyone knows I love Sakura Tyson, and it's not coming out here, so I had to buy it from Japan. I love those beautiful cases. I would very much like to see them continue. Everything in the future is always in flux, but as long as they're popular, I don't see why they would go away. Same with the physical items as well. Just, you know, fan feedback does make a difference.
Okay. From Itoju, I'm not sure this is really being parsed correctly, but above what popularity line must a series be to get a Blu-ray release? I guess he's sort of assuming that the metric for a Blu-ray release is popularity.
No, not necessarily. Because Japan and the United States, we share the same Blu-ray region. It makes things a little sticky when it comes to releasing a Blu-ray over here, because the price that we can feasibly release a Blu-ray is much lower in the United States than it is in Japan. I mean, everybody knows that. Sometimes it's all up to the contract, and every show has a different contract. And sometimes there's a holdback for Blu-ray. It's, you know, after so much time after the Japanese Blu-ray has been released, then the U.S. may release a Blu-ray. Or a Blu-ray might not have been released in Japan, and we might be releasing it for the first time. They just might want us to wait. Every single show is different. Popularity is not the main metric. And I know Lance has said this in his last time he was on AnNCast and on panels he's on. Anime fandom in general, they're early adopters. We have more anime fans that own Blu-ray players than the general consumer for entertainment. So, of course, anime Blu-ray is going to do better earlier than, say, general Hollywood. But, you know, Hollywood titles sell a lot more units than anime, generally speaking. So it's not popularity. A lot of times it's whether or not we have permission in the contract to do so, or if it's even possible. If it's something that was animated in standard definition, it might come down a little bit to popularity or cost. It's all, every single show, we have well over 200 brands here. Every single show is different. Every single contract is different.
Right. Okay, so there's a variety of factors.
Yeah.
Cowboy Dev asks, would you ever consider picking up older titles, example, something from the 70s or the 80s?
I don't really know the answer to that, or how really to answer it better than Lance did in the past. Sometimes the titles are just not available, right, or at all. A lot of titles are owned by a committee in Japan, and if the committee is not around, it's multiple factors that mostly comes down to whether or not any title would sell the number of units to make a profit and be popular over here. So that's another one of those really hard, multifaceted questions that would come down to the title, finding who owns it, finding how feasible it is, and then the price, and then go from there. It's all those factors come together in whether or not a company should or should not pick up a title, because all companies, we all need to make a profit to stay afloat. and to continue releasing properties. So that's another one that's kind of it's kind of hard to tell, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, Arabesque 9 asks, looking at the current future shows this year, so let's just say spring season this year, is there anything that looks like it will be successful if licensed, but is there anything that's on your radar from spring this year, anything you're particularly excited about?
Well, there's, when it comes to licensing shows, it's really because the Japan anime industry and the U.S. anime industry go hand in hand in many ways. We don't just ask about titles. Japan asks us about titles, too. So we pitch both ways. You know, they send us screeners that we all look at, and there's actually a whole team of people within Funimation that works with acquisitions, that we watch the screeners, and we meet on a regular basis to talk about all of the titles and all the nuances of the titles and whether or not they could be successful, how many units one believes they could sell, how much it costs, who's the licensor, would there be any holdbacks, all of that stuff. And I'm totally thrilled that I happen to be a part of that team. So all of these shows that are going on, we get the screeners from Japan, we all sit down and watch them, and we all have an opinion. Since we haven't met about spring season, it's really hard to tell at this point. I tend to like a little bit of everything. I'm very diverse in my tastes, and I can't, as for what we like and what we might be going after, I cannot talk about that because we won't know until it's signed.
Right. But you are handling C.
Yes, I am the brand manager for C, and that's another one. I'm along with Lance. Lance is a very similar type of nerdy to me, and I'm a very big economics nerd. I read business books for fun because I find them interesting and I can read them very fast. I wanted C, even when the way, 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 way early materials for it was just a picture of a burning bill of money. I was like, wow, it's a new Noetanima show about economics, and International Monetary Fund is involved. I'm interested. If we get that, I would like to have it. We are currently simulcasting C, and it's currently doing well. Again, people need to, everybody should be watching it. I know that all the Noetanima shows, if anything, they're going to be very good if they're on Noetanima. They might not be the normal type of show, but they'll be quality. All the Noetanima shows are quality. The other show that we're simulcasting right now is Aria the Scarlet Ammo, which is another brand manager is in charge of that. And it's totally opposite from C.
Right.
Cute Girls of Guns. So you got the Cute Girls of Guns show and you got the economic show. And you could watch them both.
Right.
And, yep, we are simulcasting both of them.
Okay. Digicho asks, where's the rest of Spice and Wolf and Darker Than Black, and why is it taking so long to release them?
Spice and Wolf, I am not the brand manager of, but I know it is coming out later this year. Okay. I don't know any deeper details on that, but Spice and Wolf 2 is definitely coming out later in the year.
Okay. And anything on Darker Than Black?
Darker Than Black, I believe the same thing. Again, it's it is a different brand manager, but I know they're both currently in production.
Okay. So this year?
Yes.
All right. Fleeing by Night asks, will Chuck Huber return to voice Austria in the Italian movie and World Series?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Chuck is doing great. He is also back on the writing team for Italia World Series and the movie. So Chuck Huber and Jamie Markey, they write all the goodness that you know and love for Italia. But yes, Mr. Austria is indeed back, and he sounds awesome.
All right. And similarly, FH14 asks if you have any projections of release dates for the Italian movie and the next series.
World Series Season 3 and World Series Season 4, as well as the movie, they are all in production right now. And they will be, I know at least one will be out this year in the fall. So I'm not sure which one will come first. Will it be World Series or the movie? Because they're all being worked on at the same time. But also that depends on materials, extra features, all of that stuff coming together. But there will be at least something Hitalia this year, probably the fall. I just don't know which one yet.
All right. Okay. Not going to ask about Sailor Moon. All right.
Well, Sailor Moon.
You can't even say anything, can you?
All I can say about Sailor Moon is... And that's another one. Anybody who knows me, I am one of the biggest fans of Sailor Moon on the planet. I love Sailor Moon so much. Mm-hmm. And believe me, everybody, every anime company would love to have Sailor Moon. It's the queen of anime titles. It's a treasure to fandom. It's a treasure to me. But that's, you know, that's a license that has to be negotiated. There's a lot of,
red tape.
Yeah, a lot. And everybody wants it. That's pretty much all I can say about it.
Well, it's a giant money hat for whoever gets it. That's going to be a big seller for whoever finally gets that back out on the market. Okay.
Yeah, and I would love for it to be us. But... Yeah, that's a big story with many, many, many things involved that I don't even know about. But I guess everyone, let's all keep our fingers crossed.
Right.
So.
Okay. NeoCloud9 asks what you like and or dislike about promoting the quote-unquote sexier shows like Rin or upcoming, I guess, Panty and Stoggy.
Well, I guess it's I always joke around about how I don't have a problem with the sexier shows because I think in some ways I'm secretly a 12-year-old boy. I'm very rank and a little pervy. I think they're great. I love Rin. Rin was one of the first shows that I launched. I think it's fabulous. I have no problem with the sexy, raunchy, weird, avant-garde shows. I think they're great. I think art's purpose is to get a reaction out of people, and Rin definitely gets a reaction, and Panty and Stocking most definitely gets a reaction. So I think that's very important for art, and these type of themes being explored in animation, it's very unique and very cool, and I think anybody with an open mind, I know Rin can be a little much for some people, but I think if you have an open mind and you appreciate a good story, give Rin a chance. It's not for kids. Absolutely not for kids. Wait till you turn 18. Watch all the Rin that you want. But, yeah, I have no problem with it all. I like it. I like when I get assigned them. I think being a girl promoting these shows gives a little bit of extra freedom. Like, I don't hold back on anything.
Right.
And that's like Rin I can just go crazy with. And I can go crazier with Panty and Stocking. So... Look forward to that crazy train when that starts going.
Hazukari asks, since Funimation pretty much has the rights to pretty much anything on Noi Tamine, is that true? Is that just like a blanket open contract?
No, the Noi Tanima streaming deal was only for a couple years.
Okay.
But we still have an amazing relationship with Fuji. We have a really amazing close relationship with them, and every show we of course would love to simulcast them, and we have been, you know, every season at least one Noi Tanima show we've had the absolute pleasure of simulcasting. But we have a absolutely awesome relationship with Fuji, my licensor contact at Fuji. I adore him. I call him darling. He's great, and anytime I can work with him on a show, like I'm working with him on C now, I love him. And yeah, I really hope it continues. As long as people keep watching these awesome Noi Tanima shows, it will continue. So make sure you're watching.
And, well, to complete his question, he says, does that mean we'll get a more rapid release of these shows on DVD and Blu-ray? You sort of touched on that before. It sounds like it's a show-by-show basis based on a variety of factors.
Yeah, there's also two sets of materials for every show. There's the streaming materials, the simulcast materials, that come in very quickly. And then there's the DVD, or in some cases, Blu-ray materials. They come later. They come when Japan is done with their physical release. Then we get sent them then we get sent the materials in which to work on them. So therein lies the delay. So you can't just go, you can't put the streaming stuff, you can't just put it on a DVD and call it a day. You know, we want the top quality, 100% complete final product. And then we want to bring that out to the U.S., to North American market. So that's the delay. Just because it's been picked up with full rights doesn't necessarily mean that the materials have all been delivered and it's ready to go. That's a separate process. And of course we would, you know, we would like them all to happen as soon as possible, but we want quality is the main concern. So therein lies some of the delay as well.
Okay. Well, before we let you go here, what conventions are you going to be attending this summer?
Well, this summer, I know for certain I will, and I can't talk about what they are yet, but they're going to be totally awesome. I have big things going on at Anime Expo that I think everyone is going to just totally flip their lid and squee over. Anime Expo is going to be huge, and I'll be there helping to run that circus. And I've also got big things going on at Otakon that also are still being solidified that I can't talk about yet, but they will also be really, really good. If I go to Comic-Con this year, it will be on my own. But honestly, with two big events going on at AX and Otakon, probably not.
Yeah, the Ring of Fire, as we call it. Yeah,
yeah, the Gauntlet. I did the Gauntlet last year, and the events weren't even as big. Yeah, so this is bigger than Kenji Kamiyama and the Eden and East creative team at AX, and then all the voice actors for Hitalia at Otakon. So this is going to be even bigger than that. So I'm going to have a whole lot more on my plate. for the fall, I'm not quite sure yet. I go to a lot of cons on my own because I just love anime, and I love doing the cosplay thing, and can't really... It's not really right to do the cosplay thing when you're running around with Japanese guests. They don't want to see you dressed up as a fruity, frilly princess trying to get them from point A to point B. So Generally, I save my cosplay now for the shows that I just go and hang out with my girlfriends. But I might be going to Dragon Con this year. They would like me to go with them. But for the rest of the fall, who knows? Sometimes I decide 2 weeks before and decide to go to a convention. Just whatever strikes my fancy.
But AX and Otakon for sure.
AX and Otakon for sure. I will be there with bells on at both of them, running around like crazy and loving every minute of it. I think this is such an exciting summer. The booth at AX and Otakon and Comic-Con is just going to be really, really awesome. There's going to be a lot of exciting things. And if you're going to AX or Otakon, you should definitely stop by and say hi. Tell me what you think. Feel free to come and talk my ear off. I will listen. Yeah, it's just even though it's a lot of work going into it, I always get super excited and energized at every con I go to. It's great.
Awesome. Okay, well, listen, it was fabulous. Thank you so much for coming on and chatting. I really, really appreciate it. That was very enlightening. Thanks.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and I'm so happy that I can, after another year, that I'm able to be a little bit stronger. I feel like I've leveled up so much in this last year, and I'm just even more exciting about the next year and the years coming ahead. It's a really exciting time for anime, and I feel so blessed to be a part of it.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thanks a lot. Okay, everybody, that's our show. Big thanks to Char for dropping by. You may notice we have a new theme song. The band is The New Division. The song is Bucharest, and it's on their EP, The Rookie. You can snag it on iTunes if you're digging it. You can also find the band at thenewdivision.net. Thanks for listening, and see y'all next time.